If you have ever flown Southwest and noticed the boarding process felt a little more civilized than usual, you are not imagining things. Something has been quietly shifting at the airline that once prided itself on doing everything differently. I'm Tower, this is ATIS on Radio Hangar, and today we are pulling back the curtain on a decision Southwest Airlines made 14 years ago that cost them $60 million, why they thought it was worth it at the time, and why they just reversed course. This one has layers. Today's segment is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com now. Let's talk about seats, specifically the seats Southwest took out of their airplanes. Here's what you need to know before we get into the reversal. Around 2012, Southwest made a deliberate choice to pull seats out of their Boeing 737 fleet. We are not talking about a handful of aircraft. We are talking about a system-wide configuration change that reduced the number of revenue-generating seats on each plane. The stated reason was passenger comfort, more legroom, a better onboard product. A way to compete not just on price, but on experience. The cost of that decision, when you account for the lost revenue capacity across a fleet the size of Southwest, was estimated at somewhere in the neighborhood of $60 million. That is not a rounding error. That is a strategic bet, made in ink, signed off by executives who believed the trade was worth it, and for a while it was defensible. Southwest in that era was still riding the momentum of a genuinely different business model, no assigned seats, two free checked bags. A reputation for friendly crews and no-nonsense fares, removing a few rows and giving passengers a little extra room fit the brand. It said, "We are not a sardine can, we are Southwest." The problem is that the airline industry is relentless, and the world Southwest built that strategy inside of no longer exists. Let's take a step back, because this story only makes sense if you understand what has been happening to Southwest over the past 18 months or so. The short version Southwest found itself under significant pressure from activist investors in 2024. Elliott Investment Management, which had accumulated a substantial stake in the company, made no secret of its view that Southwest's leadership and strategy needed to change. Elliott was direct. They believed Southwest was underperforming. They believed the airline was clinging to legacy decisions that no longer made financial sense in a post-pandemic, hyper-competitive market. The pressure worked. There was leadership turnover. And more importantly, there was a genuine strategic overhaul. The biggest headline out of that overhaul was the end of open seating. For decades, Southwest had no assigned seats. You picked a boarding group, you lined up, you grabbed whatever spot you wanted. It was either liberating or chaotic, depending on your personality type. Southwest called it a differentiator. Passengers who hated it called it a coin flip. The airline finally acknowledged that the data showed a significant number of potential customers were actively avoiding Southwest specifically because of open seating. So they ended it. Assigned seats are coming. Premium seating is coming. Red-eye flights are coming. That is not a tweak. That is a brand reconstruction. And now, alongside all of that, comes this. The seat reconfiguration reversal. Southwest is adding seats back into their 737 aircraft. They are essentially undoing the 2012 decision. When you do the math on a fleet the size of Southwest's, adding even a single row back to each aircraft means thousands of additional seats per day across the network. That is not trivial. At current load factors and average fares, that is material revenue. The $60 million hit they took to remove those seats begins to look like a recoverable investment once you start generating incremental revenue on the other side. Here's what you need to know about the operational reality. This kind of reconfiguration is not simple. Each aircraft has to go through a maintenance visit to have the seats physically installed. The seat tracks have to be configured, the interior has to be inspected and signed off. You're talking about a meaningful maintenance workload spread across a large fleet. It does not happen overnight. Southwest will be managing this in waves, cycling aircraft through as they can without grounding too many planes at once. The headline doesn't tell the whole story when we talk about the $60 million figure, by the way. That number captures the lost capacity from the seat removal. What it does not fully capture is the downstream effect of having fewer seats to sell at peak travel times. If you have ever watched airline pricing behavior, you know that the most expensive seat on a flight is usually the last one. When you remove seats from your aircraft, you are removing the ability to sell those last high-value seats. Over 14 years and millions of flights, the compounding effect of that capacity gap is almost certainly much larger than the initial $60 million estimate. Now, why does this matter to you as a pilot, especially if you fly general aviation? A few reasons, and none of them are trivial. The first is what Southwest's network means for secondary and mid-size airports. Southwest has historically served airports that the legacy carriers often ignored or underserved. Think Midway instead of O'Hare. Think Hobby instead of Bush Intercontinental. Think Burbank, Long Beach, Providence, Manchester. These are airports with active general aviation operations sitting right alongside the commercial terminal. When Southwest adds capacity to those routes, it affects gate availability, ramp congestion, tower workload, and sometimes even fuel pricing at fixed base operators on the field. More Southwest operations at a regional airport is not just a business story. It is an operational reality for the GA pilot who regularly uses that airport. The second reason this matters is what it says about the economics of the industry writ large. Airlines have enormous influence over the pilot job market, which affects career pipelines, regional carrier staffing, and ultimately the availability of experienced instructors in the flight training ecosystem. Southwest's financial health, or lack of it, ripples outward. The third reason, and this is the one that I find genuinely interesting from a pilot perspective, the reconfiguration of an aircraft's interior is a certified maintenance action. Every seat that goes back into those 737s has to be installed, tracked, and documented in accordance with the manufacturer's approved data and Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, oversight requirements. The supplemental type certificate world touches every aircraft owner. When a major carrier does a fleet-wide interior mod, the ripple effects are felt by the maintenance industry, the parts supply chain, and the DER and DAS network that supports certification work. This is not abstract. It is the same ecosystem that a Citation owner taps into when they want to upgrade their avionics or change their seat configuration. Let me come back to the Southwest story and give you the bigger picture, because I think the lesson here is worth sitting with for a minute. Southwest built a remarkable competitive advantage on unconventional decisions. No assigned seats, open boarding, two free bags, point-to-point routing instead of the hub and spoke model that dominates the legacy carriers. For most of their history, those unconventional choices were actual differentiators. Passengers chose Southwest because of them. The seat removal in 2012 fit that philosophy. It said, "We will give up revenue to give you a better product. That is a generous bet to make, but markets change." The low-cost carrier landscape that Southwest once dominated looks very different today. Ultra-low-cost carriers like Spirit and Frontier, before their own significant struggles, had compressed fares to the point where Southwest's price advantage eroded. Full-service carriers got more competitive on select routes, and passengers faced with actual choices revealed something Southwest did not want to hear. A lot of them wanted assigned seats more than they wanted extra legroom. The $60 million seat removal was not a bad idea in the context of 2012. It was a reasonable call with the information available at the time. What makes this story interesting is not that Southwest made a mistake. It is that they recognized the environment had changed and made a different call. That is actually harder than it sounds for an organization the size of Southwest, with the institutional memory and culture that airline has built over 5 decades. Admitting that a core product decision needs to be undone is not easy. There is organizational ego involved. There are sunk costs that make people reluctant to reverse course. The $60 million is gone. It is not coming back. The only question is whether you keep absorbing the ongoing opportunity cost or you make the change. They are making the change. Whether it is enough to satisfy investors and stabilize the airline's competitive position is a separate question, and one that will play out over the next several years. Adding seats back solves a capacity problem. It does not automatically solve a pricing problem, a brand perception problem, or a labor cost problem. Southwest still has work to do on all of those fronts, but getting the aircraft configuration right is the foundation. You cannot sell a seat that does not exist. There is something almost philosophical about this, if you will allow me a moment. Aviation in general, whether we are talking about a major carrier or a single-engine private pilot, requires constant reassessment. The conditions that made a decision correct at 10,000 feet may be completely different at 6,000. You do not grip the yoke harder and insist on the original plan. You evaluate. You adjust. You fly the airplane that is in front of you, not the one you planned for. Southwest is flying the airplane that is in front of them. That is the most charitable and probably most accurate read of what is happening here, for the record. Simple Flying reported on this story and had solid detail on the capacity math and the timeline of the original 2012 decision. Worth a read if you want to go deeper on the numbers. You can find us at RadioHangar.com. I'm Tower. Fly safe out there.